This is Karen Lyle with SailSport Talk, checking in on the America's Cup. America's Cup has always been a boat design race, putting their competition to work to push forward sailboat design. 2024 will host the Women's America's Cup and the Youth America's Cup on the AC40, the younger sister of the AC75. The AC40 is a result of those technological advances, a foiling monohull that is 11.8 meters, 38 feet long. Here is Nathan Outeridge describing the autopilot systems on board the boat that help the pilots sail on the water with the assistance of highly sophisticated technology.
So the AC40 is, you know, an incredibly complicated boat, but to make it simple and easy as possible to sail for the Youth America's Cup and Women's America's Cup, the systems on board have been designed so that it's actually quite an easy boat to sail despite how complex it is. One of the things that makes the boat so easy to sail is the autopilot. So there's a simple button here on the left-hand side which you can just switch the boat into autopilot mode. And then effectively for flying the boat, you've got two real inputs. You can either adjust the height at which the boat sails or how much foil you have in the water with a simple plus and minus. And then there's the trim, so you can change the attitude of the boat. More bow down, more bow up. And so, you know, for someone like myself who has a lot of foiling experience but never sailed a boat like this, it's been pretty easy through the commissioning just with the way that the autopilot software works. So then the other panel of buttons here is all to do with the boards up and down system. So you've got a board up button and a board down button. You can also do a plus and minus on the cant system. So effectively from this seat here, you can do all the functions you need for flying the boat. So the AC40 sail with four people. You've got two people on each side. As you can see, I'm in a bucket seat here and we've got another one at the back. I'm almost sitting on the floor, so you're incredibly low and out of the wind, and it's the same configuration on the other side. And then the aero trimmer sits behind you, and they've got controls for the mainsail and the jib at the back of the boat. So one of the cool things about this is you can choose if you want to trim the mainsail or the jib, because every time you tack and jibe, you know, the way the boat's been designed, that the mainsail trimmer will be sitting on the windward side and the jib trimmer will probably be sitting to leeward because they have a much better view of the jib. So a simple button press will switch you from main functions to jib functions. And then you've got a bunch of push buttons. So you've got Cunningham control, the clew position, so you've got the card that slides on the clew, so you're basically creating more depth in the sail and making the sail flatter. When you tack and jibe, obviously the mast needs to rotate, so a button actually lights up, it turns purple, and you push that button and it rotates the mast. So there's a lot of software that's been developed in the background to stop you basically doing any damage to these boats. So, you know, if you're overpowered, you can just hold your finger on the Cunningham, you pump it super hard, it hits a pressure relief, the lights up and says you're at max load and you can take your finger off the buttons.
This is Karen Lyle with SailSport Talk.
All right, thank you for that, and welcome back to the show. It's Tuesday at 9:40 out here in San Francisco. Rick Tittle with you on Sports Byline, coast to coast and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. That music means it's time to check in with SailSportTalk.com's Karen Lyle once again. Karen, how are we doing?
I'm doing great. Rick, how are you doing?
Not too bad. Let's bring in our guest, because Karen, you and I are East Bay folks, and let's go over to the Berkeley Yacht Club and bring in Dr. John Clauser, who has just won the Nobel Prize for quantum physics. Dr. Clauser, welcome to the show. And just a quick thumbnail to those of us who aren't quite as savvy, quantum physics dealing with subatomic particles. Can you give us just a thumbnail on what you discovered or explained to the world?
Thank you. It isn't easy to do with a thumbnail, but basically just did an experiment quite a long time ago, 1972, when I was a postdoc at University of California, Berkeley, in the physics department. Did an experiment there with Stu Friedman. Actually, this was an experiment that I had proposed earlier while I was still a graduate student at Columbia, working with Abner Shimoni and Mike Horn and Dick Holt. Basically, what we discovered effectively is that you can't put you can't always put a single bit of information in a box, if you will. And you could, for example, you can encode that single bit of information in two different widely separated particles. In our case, we were using photons, and that in order to determine what the single bit of information is, you've got to measure both particles, and they've got to be very far apart, or they can be very far apart, and still maintain an intimate correlation requiring both of them to be measured in order to determine the bit of information. And that has been used since then for as a foundation for quantum information and quantum encryption and onto quantum computing.
You know, John, you and I have sat with your wife, Bobby Tosi, at the Berkeley Yacht Club for many an old salt dinner and so forth, and I never knew that you had this physics background, or we would have definitely had a conversation on this subject. But you have your boat, Bodacious, has been at the dock, I think, when I organized the St. Francis Yacht Club tour in for, you know, cruising for Berkeley Yacht Club and so forth. Tell me, do you know Dr. Steven Weinberg? Because he was my first physics teacher at the University of Texas, and he's in that same field.
Yes, I don't think I've ever met him. He did include me in a book that he recently wrote about foundations of quantum mechanics. But yes, he's one of the more important physicists in history. Yes.
The other thing too.
Also, if I can, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Karen.
I just wanted to follow up. So this idea of Bell's theory of entanglement, you know, where two particles can basically mirror each other inside and outside the box, as it were, has been applied to black holes. Have you, you know, I know that your contribution was coming up with an experiment that people could basically test this theory. How did you do that in I guess it was 1972. How did you test this theory?
Well, okay, this is an experiment that my associates, Abner Shimoni, Mike Horn, and I, and Dick Holt, proposed in '69. It was based on an idea by John Bell, who was a theorist at CERN. And basically so in 1972, when I became a postdoc at Cal Berkeley, worked with a graduate student, Stu Friedman. This became his PhD thesis. Basically, what we did was we had a two-photon source, rather complicated at the time, because we did not have available to us tunable lasers. And so we built this very complicated system that would generate pairs of entangled photons. And the pairs of entangled photons, one of them was violet colored, these are particles of light, one of them was green, and we sent them all, collected ones and were propagating in opposite directions, and we passed them through some very complicated polarizers. Were basically a whole series of sheets of very thin glass inclined at a very specific angle, and rotated the polarizers and we spent 200 hours collecting data on all of this, and we found that the correlations, as a function of the angle where we set these polarizers, indicated that the particles were very, very strongly correlated, much more as in that the bits of information that the pair of them encoded together were intimately connected with each other, much more than you could explain by each of them having its own piece of information. So that experiment we did back in 1972 in a sub-basement of Burge Hall on the UC campus.
Couple more questions for Nobel Prize winner Dr. John Klosser, a member of the Berkeley Yacht Club. I know that the Nobel Prize comes with 10 million Swedish krona. Are you going to buy the biggest yacht you've ever seen?
right now I'm going to fix up what I have. What I have is already maybe too big. I have a One Design 48, which I'm struggling to sail and to keep a crew together and to keep all of the hardware we break fixed. I'm not sure I know what I'll do with the money, but I just suggested, man, well, you should go out and buy some more sails.
Well, there's always something that sailor can spend on a boat unit. A sailor can spend on their boat for sure. So tell me, John, as you've been watching quantum information science develop since the time of your experiment, what's been the most, you know, amazing application that you've seen? I know there's like, you know, the quantum computing and other things that are coming out and just the research on black holes. What really has sparked your interest?
Well, the current actually useful application is that is today being used is quantum encryption. And in particular, the Chinese have the Messias satellite, which they use for secure, unhackable, if you will, secure communication between two remote sites thousands of kilometers apart. And they do this by beaming down from the satellite a pair of entangled particles. In fact, the configuration of that satellite looks almost identical to that of the experiment that Stu Friedman and I did in 1972. So quantum encryption is now a reality. Quantum computing is another one that is being suggested. I don't know very much about quantum computing. I'm not certainly not an expert in that field. From what I hear about it, I think that that's probably a long way off.
And one more question about that. How are you on string theory? What do you think?
If I had a daughter, I wouldn't let her marry a string theorist.
Why not?
String theory, as far as I can tell, has never made any experimental predictions. Is purely a branch of mathematics, as far as I can tell. There's a difference between mathematics and physics. Is that mathematicians basically speculate on all the worlds that might be, and then they make various suggestions, and some of them have the arrogance to claim that their theories alone are sufficient to explain everything that without even looking at what they are trying to explain. I pride myself as being an experimentalist. An experimental physicist. What a physicist's job is to pick and choose or consider among all the various possible worlds that might be, and answer the question: well, which one do we personally live in? There, you have to tie the result very carefully to experiment. And without that, you're just speculating about how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, if you will. And to my knowledge, string theorists are really mathematicians and not would not give them dignify them as calling them physicists.
All right, there he is. Go ahead, Karen, real quick.
Oh, John, that would be a great conversation at the bar, I think, between you and a mathematician. I want to listen in.
Especially with a string theorist.
All right, good to know. It's Dr. John Klosser, Nobel Prize for Quantum Physics, yet another Nobel laureate over at UC Berkeley. Doctor, thank you for coming on. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
And Karen, very interesting guest there. Thanks for coming by once again.
Well, certainly. It's just amazing who you find on a sailboat, right?
Good stuff. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Next week, Tuesday.
Okay, Tuesday it is. If it's Tuesday, it must be Belgium. Did you watch that movie? And also, it must be salesporttalk.com. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back on Sports Byline.